And I want to start by saying in terms of Dr. Lawrence's presentation, what came to my mind was I have a very, very close friend in South Carolina who was got asylum from the Congo to come to the U.S. Because of the Civil War. And once he got here, it took him 6 years to get his family here. And once he got his family here, he had his oldest son sign up to play soccer and football at a local college there and died. Had from sickle cell, and they found out that he had sickle cell disease. He went for a practice, and he simply died from exertion. So it was, it brought a lot back to me in terms of this is really real. I'm gonna start by saying I don't have anything to disclose, but I'm gonna change the focus some, and I'm gonna talk a little bit about biobanks and repositories, and so it's gonna be a little different in terms of what I have to say. I'm gonna start by first giving some idea of what a biobank is and what a repository is, so that we can all be on the same accord. And then I'm gonna talk about our institution in terms of trying to put together a biobank, and then the last part is how did we involve and engage the community to help with the establishment of the policies for this biobank. So when we think in terms of a biobank and or a repository, it is an organized collection of human biological materials that you collect from patients, and it's you and information that's stored in a secure location and later used for research and lots of times for genetic research. And so sometimes the problems we have is that when it begins to be used for genetic research is when we have all of the issues with the biobanks. When biobanks initiated years ago, there are basically essentially two types of biobanks. One would be type one, which in the past has been identified data where you link the sample with the person and you also return the results to the person. And you had a long informed consent process. The new age is biobanks now, biobank number two. Biobank number two would be the kind of biobank now that what we call de-identify, which we cannot link, do not give results back, and has a different kind of consent process, and usually it's what we call opt-out. And we can talk about that a little later. Now, as a new frontier for biomedical research and clinical genomics and personalized medicine, biobanks seek to do a lot of things. They collect the DNA tissue, they get the information from the patients, we get medical history, and we also get lifestyle information in hopes that all of this information together would be used for future research. The establishment of biobanks can lead to improved epidemiological knowledge of common complex diseases such as diabetes and cardiovascular disease, and that's why it's really important. Our institution in South Carolina was one of the institutions that received what we call the CTSA funding, and a lot of the institutions that have CTSA funding moved toward establishing biobanks. And so when our institution received the monies for the CTSA for 5 years, then they decided they want to go for a biobank. And at a meeting, I kind of thought, well, if we're going to do the biobank, where is the community component part in here to help us establish this biobank? So they gave me a small grant to do this. And just it was a presentation by Dr. Sander that talked about when we think in terms of biobank, these are the kind of challenging questions that we have to ask ourselves. Obtain the informed consent process. How do you protect patients' privacy? How and when do you disclose any kind of results? Who has ownership of the samples of the data? What are the intellectual property rights? What governance is in place to protect people? And the ethical use of these specimens. And I added on the recruitment process because lots of biobanks, even though we have over 300 million biospecimens currently in this country, the percent of African Americans or other ethnic minorities is minimum. So then we get to the question of equity. So the purpose of my pilot project was to assess the community's attitudes and acceptance as part of the planning process for our biorepository. Of course, it was a mixed method. We had a phase one, phase two, phase three. Phase one consists of cognitive interviews and focus groups. And then phase two was the refinement of the pretesting of the survey tool. And then phase three is when we actually did the mass survey and community education. Our conceptual framework was community engagement, and that approach will help us to facilitate the acceptance and understanding and participation of the community toward this establishment, because we had to actually go to the community and get this information. In terms of our data analysis, we use content analysis with a ground theory approach, and our patient characteristics consist of from diverse faith communities. We had AMEs, we had Christians, we had rabbis, we had African Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans, different ethnic groups, patients, consumers, educators, administrators, and politicians. And lastly, for our survey, we use what they think aloud for content validity, because the initial survey that we had came from Vanderbilt, and I'll just pass this around and show you what it looked like. And after our think aloud process, it was amazing how 12 people sat into a room and tore up the survey. So we essentially came up with another survey that spoke to the needs of the community. Now, briefly, the results from phase one and two, we had an end of 79. We had 10 cognitive interviews, 7 focus groups, and 10 did think aloud. Now, we came across 4 themes that were just kind of both in terms of the interviews and the focus group. The 4 themes were altruism, acceptance, anxiety, and fear, and education. In terms of altruism, people said in both the focus groups and cognitive interviews, I support the biobank as long as I can help somebody. And it is a one-time thing. Do not cost me anything to participate. And another one said, you can go to the hospital, get admitted, sign papers, just like the living will. And I'll talk about that a little bit more. In terms of acceptance, I think it's a good thing if it can help find cures and treatments, but we need to be educated about it. In terms of anxieties and fears, I think anytime you can do research and not hurt somebody, it is a win-win. And then our institution has a sorted past with research in the African American community and minorities, period. And so what was reoccurring was that people said to me over and over again, remember our history in MUSC. Because I'm not sure if you remember the Riding Doctors. There's a book where people talked about doctors would ride on horses and take bodies and then take them to the hospital to do research. So it's a deep-seated fear in our community. And our community is unique because we're in South Carolina, we're on the coast, and some of those communities have been isolated for years, and so they maintain very, very close ties to the African roots. Education. Education is a slow process, and that was over and over again. It would take a lot of education to change people, and prior knowledge is important. Now, in phase three with our community education, we started doing community town hall meetings across the area. The surveys, we're supposed to mail 5,000 surveys to patients, and we picked counties where patients that had the largest number of participants in our hospital. The surveys were mailed in-house, and there was some kind of error, and we only mailed 4,500 out. The surveys, we have this system called REDCap. I'm not too familiar with it, but it's a system where surveys are developed and they come back into the institution. And so we have a total of 8,000 employees at MUSC, which would be employees and students. This is what the survey looks like now. And what's going around now is you'll see a very non-friendly survey to give to people. This is the other one. So what the Think Aloud group said, you got to do 2 things, Ida. One is that you're going to separate out the surveys. The initial survey was just one survey that was for patients, students, employees. So they said no. You got to have a survey for patients by itself and a survey for employees and students together. The survey for the patients, they wanted to say, and you would see the old one going around, thank you for your willingness to participate. It was like, well, I didn't give you permission, so why would you put that? Don't put that on. So you need to start out with saying what it is, and so the whole logical order of the survey was changed. for both employees and for the students. Now, here's what some of the responses look like so far. Out of the 8,000 employees and students, as of when I told this up from REDCap, we had 2,323 responses from employees and students. 46 were partially completed, and the ones that were totally completed was 2,277. We will close collection of the surveys the last of November, so we have some time left to get. I wanted to get to at least 3,000. When the power calculation was done by the stats on the project, he said we sent out 5,000 to get 1,000 to be okay. In terms of the patients, we randomly, I said earlier, mailed it to 4,500 people, patients, and what we have thus far now is 455. So our next step is to continue the data analysis of the surveys, publications, and presentations, and we want to inform policy developments and procedures. And because this is a public health forum, it is important at this point that as biobanks become the next step in terms of research in this country, it has to take on a public health component so that we can promote it. Otherwise, it will be lost in the mesh of all of this because it has so many issues that frame within the public health content. So in terms of nursing implications, nurses are in a unique position to advance translational research by becoming involved in any of the above, as well as to seek competitive funding. Because we're in a position when we see patients that we have a one-on-one relationship with patients. Patients trust us. And so yeah, patients trust nurses more than doctors. Yes, they do. And patients will come to the nurse and feel that they get the questions answered as well. So I think it puts us in a unique position, particularly we in public health, to make a difference in terms of how do we move the revolution on forward for biobanks and repositories in this country, because it's going to happen, and we need to be at the table and not be left behind. Yes. This is my funding and my references, and I want to show you my grandson. Thank you.